And next I'd like to invite Anna Peabody up to talk in the order and answer in the order of Dan, Rob, and Liz.
Hi everyone, I'm Anna. I'm a junior ballet major here at IU. I know I'm not alone when I say that I have family members and friends who are controlled and have been killed by addiction. Is all around us. And many of you may not know, but it's on this campus as well. I have struggled with addiction. I'm now a student in recovery here at Bloomington. I'm part of that. My question to you is, what will you do to ensure that the people struggling with addiction in this district get the care that they need without unjust prison sentences?
Thank you. Yeah, you need to be careful. Yeah, you touched on it. I mean, it's the idea that we associate addiction with the criminal justice system, something we take for granted in the United States, you know? And I think the biggest cultural challenge that we've got for the addiction problem, to the extent that there's a universal problem, I mean, this district is diverse, folks. Don't let anybody tell you otherwise. But to the extent that we've got a universal problem that plagues everybody in this district, it's the problem of addiction, drug addiction in general, specifically the opioid crisis right now. But it changes forms from time to time. And what we've done now for probably 80 years in American society is treat it like it's a criminal justice problem. And so our cultural challenge is that we've got to pick that up out of the criminal justice box and move it over here to the public health box. That's where it's going. Treating it like it's a public health problem and not a criminal justice problem, we're just locking people up for, well, then this whole new panoply of options open up to us. And of course we're advocating for universal health care that would allow people to get the sort of early intervention and treatment that's so important in dealing with addiction. So I think on the front end, that is one way that we deal with it. We need to make health care, early intervention, affordable and available to people. The availability is another thing that's a whole separate issue, because many people who want to get treatment, even people that can afford treatment, even people that have insurance, don't have any place to go. So we can make investments in treatment centers. I think for every dollar we spend in rehab, we're saving $7 on the end in the criminal justice system. So it's not just, I mean, we should talk about the moral aspects of this thing first, but then also be talking about the economic aspects on the back end, because the economics work out for us. A little bit of investment in this problem, and we can fix it. Also, on the back end, harm reduction strategies, right? The availability of naloxone and making sure that we keep up these needle exchange programs that are going on in Indiana that have saved so many lives. I think that's critical. We could be doing that out of our congressional offices as well. Thank you.
Show and tell tonight. I collect about a dozen or so of these off my front lawn, on the side of the road, throughout the year. And the needle exchange programs are very necessary because they stop the spread of disease, HIV, hepatitis. We have to fund these programs. They're already making projections about how many people are going to die. One of the contrasts that I can tell you about is the difference between Russia, how they handled it. They just let people die. Western Europe, they already had healthcare in place, universal healthcare. They had, instead of maybe, I think it was like 800,000 people dying in Russia, I think it was about 300,000 or 400,000. And they're getting a grip on their opioid crisis. They're getting a grip on their addiction issues. Countries like Portugal decriminalizing. All those things are very important if we're going to battle the situation properly. But I understand. I mean, it hits me personally in a small way, but it's there. I'm aware of it. And my neighbor, not even really living in a bad neighborhood, but they go and they shoot up over at the church across the street. So, you know, if one of the, I think this is a good issue to show that a lot of the issues that we have are interwoven and entwined. They affect each other. You know, our criminal justice system wouldn't be as overburdened if we actually gave the treatment that folks need with addiction. We know it doesn't work, and we have to stop perpetuating, you know, for-profit industries. I went to the opioid summit, and there were already people there, vendors, for-profit for treatment. And it's just unacceptable. But we need lots of money, lots of training, and we definitely need to get these services out to the people that have trouble.
So this is an issue, again, where I think if our representative, Trey Hollingsworth, listened to people in the district, he'd hear a lot of good ideas about what to do about the opioid crisis. That's what I'm doing. I'm actually holding a town hall on the opioid crisis in Mitchell. I'm holding two town halls. I've already done one, and doing my second one on public education, by the way, with teachers and parents, and a lot of other folks in the field. Here's what I heard when I sat down for 2 hours in Bedford with moms who were taking care of their grandchildren because their kids were struggling with addiction and had to give them custody. I heard that there aren't enough resources for the addiction treatment programs that we have. So if somebody gets treatment, they're not able to stay there long enough to really get clean, and they aren't able to get mental health counseling and the kinds of supports they need. When they come out, they can't find affordable housing. We need to make a much bigger federal investment in affordable housing in this country to support people who need it, including people in recovery. People are getting sentenced to a lifetime of poverty because they come out, they have criminal records, and they can't get jobs. As I taught my employment discrimination class at Maurer Law School, here in Indiana, we have incredibly restrictive laws that keep people from being able to get jobs once they have criminal convictions. We need to reform our sentencing laws. The war on drugs hasn't worked. This is absolutely a public health crisis. We need to invest in solving it. So I strongly support adequate funding. You know, Trump claims this is an emergency. Where is the funding to deal with this emergency? We need to really put the resources into solving this problem. And I'm dedicated to doing that for the families across the ninth who are struggling. And we need to make sure people have living wage jobs. That's so important, because when people are struggling paycheck to paycheck, sometimes they turn to drugs for distraction. We can do something about that. We can create economic opportunity in people's lives.
And so I want to have an honest conversation with the three candidates about the big S. According to recent polling, a majority of millennials, especially those aged 18 to 24, believe that socialism is a potentially better system for society than capitalism. SEO. And I think that as millennials, our expectations for the world have been shaped by crisis after crisis and blunder after blunder that we are going to have to pay for. How do you all understand this historic trend among the now largest voting age demographic? Do you believe that this shift is good for our movement? And do you think that the Democratic Party can start to win victories if they embrace this sentiment?
Thank you for that question. So I think the idea that DSA espouses, and it's really important that we've had DSA take hold across the country, and I think it has been very good for our politics as a nation and for our country. The idea that we can make sure that every single one of us in the richest nation on earth has enough to thrive, and DSA getting behind ideas like Medicare for all and college for all, right, and pre-K for all. These are all things that I stand for, and they're all things that I support, and it's very important that you're pushing hard for these things to happen. We know that when we actually make sure that every single person in this country's needs are met, we make the pie bigger for everyone. But what Donald Trump and Trey Hollingsworth want to do is they want to convince us, right? They want us to be convinced that there isn't enough, that there's scarcity. They want to leave us fighting over crumbs, right? While they make off, you know, with basically the whole darn pie. And that is not okay, and we have to keep pushing back on that, and we have to insist, absolutely insist, on these big, bold ideas that we can make real on the ground. Big, bold ideas like making sure single-payer healthcare is on the table in this Congress and in Congress in which one of us up here will serve. That's really critically important. And we insist on that when we have the backing from people like you. That's exactly what gives us the strength to move forward in this fight. So I think it's absolutely important for the party. I think it's important for the nation. I think it's important for all of us, and it's how we're gonna win these big fights on the issues we all care about, like making sure that every single person who gets sick in this country has a fighting chance to get better.
I'm proud to carry the endorsement of two separate democratic socialist organizations. We've run there proudly since the beginning of this campaign, and I do not believe that the label of democratic socialist or socialist in general is something that we ought to be running from in the year 2018. And there's two reasons for that. One is that they're going to call us that no matter what. Y'all remember 2016 when professor at the business school ran for Congress, Shelley Yoder, and was called Socialist Shelley? Okay, they're gonna call us that no matter what, is where I'm going with that. The other is that, look, this is the future of the left. This is it. You know, this is, the DSA is talking about the big ideas. My finance director is DSA, you know, that's this weird sort of irony, isn't it? Yeah, the finance director is DSA. But anyway, this is the future of the left. They're giving us something to shoot at. This is something we desperately need in America. Not something to literally shoot at, we have a lot of that. But something that we can aim for, right? Something that we can aspire to, something that is revolutionary. We have to talk in revolutionary terms if we expect to get new people out to the polls. So I've said it many, many times before. The way in which we go about this process of policy, the way in which we make social change, can be incremental, and that is fine. But we must be revolutionary in our aspirations. So we have nothing to inspire people with and no way to get new people into the party and new people to the left, and therefore no way to make meaningful social change. So yeah, I'm all in for DSA.